Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an assessment of whether Mitt Romney will be slowed or sullied in New Hampshire as Ron Paul makes gains on Romney's substantial lead. Michael Lind, who has an article at Salon.com, Race, Liberty, and Ron Paul, joins us. Then we will look into strikes in oil-rich Nigeria over the removal of gas subsidies that have more than doubled the price of gasoline. Omoyele Sowore, a Nigerian human rights and pro-democracy campaigner who is the founder and publisher of SaharaReporters.com, joins us to discuss the role of Shell Oil, the IMF, and rampant corruption in the Nigerian government at a time when the president, Goodluck Jonathan, has declared a state of an emergency in the government's conflict with the Islamist militia Boko Haram. Then, finally, Tom Ferguson joins us. He has an article at Alternet, The Devil and Rick Santorum, Dilemmas of a Wholly Owned Subsidiary, that's H-O-L-Y, that makes the case that while Republican policies are stunningly oriented towards making the richest Americans richer, they have spent decades cultivating ordinary voters to focus on social wedge issues rather than economic policies that are and are thus missing an opportunity in 2012 since the Democrats are vulnerable on the economy. Joining us now is Michael Lind, who is the Whitehead Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation. He's the author of a number of books, including Made in Texas, George W. Bush and the Southern Takeover of American Politics, and What Lincoln Believed. His book, The American Way of Strategy, U.S. Foreign Policy and the American Way of Life, was critically hailed as a groundbreaking study of America's relationship with the world. Mr. Lind has been an editor or staff writer for The New Yorker, Harper's Magazine, and The New Republic. He has an article at Salon.com, Race, Liberty, and Ron Paul. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Lind.
Well, thank you for having me, Ian.
And Ron Paul is making some inroads into the substantial lead that Romney has in New Hampshire and also in South Carolina. He's coming in second, according to the polls. Do you think it's going to make any difference? This is beginning to feel pretty much like an inevitability that Romney will quickly sew up the nomination.
Well, Newt Gingrich pointed out that because of the proportional representation rules in terms of the voting, that is, it's not winner-take-all in a lot of the primaries, it might be more difficult for Romney to sew everything up until a latter date. But so far, it appears that the conservatives are splitting their vote among multiple candidates the way they did in 2008. And that, of course, allowed a moderate Republican, John McCain, or at least relatively moderate by the standards of his party, to win the nomination.
So what explains the fact that the conservative vote is dispersed? The Southern evangelicals, there's some of their powerhouses, Gary Bauer, the Reverend Dobson, and Don Wildman, apparently meeting in Texas trying to come up with an alternative to what they have. Ironically, the two kind of Christian conservatives are both Catholics. Does that matter much to that vote?
Well, I think what you're seeing is, as I wrote in the Salon a year or so ago, that the right has now become a counterculture. In the same way as the radical left, the hippie and yippie left of the 1960s, was not interested in changing society but simply wanted to reject it or secede from it, I think you're seeing the same kind of mentality on the right now. And what is typical of countercultures, at least when they're in politics, is that they continually devour themselves because no leader is pure enough for the faithful. And what you saw on the radical left in the 1960s was just one schism after another as the movement fissioned along ideological lines into smaller and smaller sectarian groups. And I think you're seeing this here. It kind of reminds me in a way of the German Green Party in the 1990s, because the Greens were a young party, and they were divided between what was the two wings of the Realos, that is the realists, and the Fundis, the fundamentalists. And I think you see sort of a Realo-Fundi divide now in the American right.
Well, but hasn't it always been assumed, Michael Lind, that conservatives in this country are much more pragmatic than liberals, who tend to be quite self-righteous and easily disappointed, whereas Republicans seem to be able to swallow it? And after all, it does seem that in many ways the way that the Republican presidential system works is that the person who's been in there the longest and has paid the most dues wins it, like McCain, like Bob Dole, and like Romney. There's an assumption that they'll get over their ideological differences and get behind their candidates because they have such a deep hatred for Obama.
Well, I think those generalizations were true of the Republicans of the Eisenhower and Nixon era, and maybe even of the Bob Dole era. But right now, what has happened is, as a result of this long-term transformation of the party system, the base of the Republican Party is the white South, the white Protestant evangelical South. And so this is a radically different political culture from that of the old Northeastern and Midwestern local businessmen and JCs, you know, and bankers who used to be the core of the Republican Party. These are the great-great-grandchildren of the Confederates, who tried to destroy the country rather than compromise. And then they used the filibuster decade after decade to block civil rights. So in my view, and I'm a white Southerner myself, you know, this is all very clear. If you look at everything from trying to shut down the government, you know, to the claim that a fairly center-right Democrat is a radical, you know, trying to destroy the nation, this comes straight out of what used to be the right wing of the Southern Democrats. It is not coming out of the playbook of the older moderate Republicans, including Mitt Romney's father, the governor of Michigan, who was a classic moderate Republican of the Rockefeller School. This is more Strom Thurmond, Dixiecrat mentality.
So, Michael Lind, why don't they have a candidate then? If they dominate the party, I guess the closest Southerner they have would be Newt Gingrich.
Well, their natural candidate really should have been Rick Perry, and he just failed. He just does not have the personal characteristics and possibly the skills to unite this coalition. But you know, he's an evangelical Protestant. He was a military cadet at Texas A&M. He served in the military, Texas governor. You know, on paper he looked like their candidate. Mm-hmm. But he just flubbed it. And I can say, as a native Texan, one of the reasons some of these Texas governors like Perry and also Bush, who was elected, George W. Bush, you know, tend to surprise people with their ineptitude at the national level, is the fact that the Texas governor has very little power. It's largely a symbolic position. The lieutenant governor really runs the state. It's a quasi-parliamentary system. So the fact that you've been Texas governor really doesn't mean you've ever done anything other than meet with Girl Scouts, you know, and issue proclamations.
So can they do anything, given that their best hope was Perry and he just basically fizzled, and Gingrich is a little quirky, I suppose, and damaged goods? What are they going to do? Are they going to get surly and stay home? Or are they going to back Santorum? Or what, is there any role for them apart from being spoilers?
Well, I wouldn't rule any of these second and third tier candidates out, including Perry and Gingrich, because once this moves into the deep South, into South Carolina, then who knows? You know, you may have some of the conservatives drop out, and they may rally behind one. It's possible that this will repeat the script of 2008, in which the conservatives divided their vote, allowing the moderate to win. But it's not certain. This is a crazy year, and this is a party that increasingly is apocalyptic and countercultural in its view of things. You know, and in some ways, this is like 1964. When Barry Goldwater, essentially, the conservatives knew he couldn't be elected, but they didn't care.
Right.
It was expressive politics.
But surely the fact that that Romney's ahead in the polls in South Carolina indicates that, I mean, if you believe polls, and, you know, obviously you take a chance on them, but they've been largely correct so far. So where's the evidence then in South Carolina that
well, the only poll that counts is the actual vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we'll see. But I wouldn't just take polls in all these primary states and then say it's all over. As somebody pointed out, some incredibly negligible people so far has voted in the Republican presidential primaries. You'd point 0.0001 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a bit early to declare that it's over. My money would be on Romney.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Lind, who's the Whitehead Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation and the author of a number of books, including Made in Texas, George W. Bush and the Southern Takeover of American Politics. He has an article at Salon.com, Race, Liberty, and Ron Paul. Now, when you say in your article that Ron Paul displays moral idiocy by drawing a line from the Civil Rights Act directly to the Patriot Act, blaming all of that America's path towards this police state on the Civil Rights Act of 1964, to some extent he was challenged in that first debate up in New Hampshire by the questions of racist ramblings in his newsletter. But he defended himself in a way that that I frankly found interesting, that in this sort of constipated and sterile political arena that we have in the United States where serious issues are never discussed, this man brought up some pretty serious issues about how disproportionately whites use drugs, but blacks goes to prison for them, and how the poor blacks are the ones that get hauled into the military and sent off on these useless losing wars, etc. And to me, that was kind of worth the price of entry.
Well, the man is a master rhetorician, but the fact is there are a lot of people with a sincere concern about the fate of black Americans who do not then say, oh, but it's a terribly tyrannical to require stores to serve black patrons, right? And that is what he has said repeatedly, as well as his son, you know, saying that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and equivalent legislation was wrong, that to this day, if a store wanted to say colored's not allowed, that it would be better to allow that to happen legally, because it would be tyrannical to tell the store owner, you must serve people of all races. Right.
Well, that's true. That's kind of a wacky theory. But what he actually said in his defense was a really shameful reality in America, that whites don't tend to go to jail for drug use when they're the majority of drug users, whereas blacks do. The prisons are full of disproportionately with young black men. And he brought that up. I thought that was worth bringing up. Of course, there was no discussion of it.
That's because you're a progressive, and progressives resonate with his opposition to endless foreign wars and with a lot of this moral libertarianism and civil libertarianism. But I'm just saying that there's this other half, and you can't have one half of Ron Paul libertarianism without the other half. And there is a reason why he is running in the Republican primary rather than the Democratic primary. And there's a reason why these right-wing white backlash voters vote for him, as well as these other backlash candidates who more or less explicitly play on racism, like Rick Santorum saying the other day that black people should not live off of money given to them by other people. And
Gingrich, by the way, is associating food stamps with black Americans, when in fact the majority of users of food stamps are white Americans.
Yeah, no, it is not the case that all conservatives are racist, or that you can just reduce conservatism or libertarianism to racism. But I would like to make one basic point. You can't get off the hook by saying that, well, I like black people, but on the other hand, I think it would be tyrannical to prevent the store owner from calling the police to drag away the unwanted colored shopper. That just doesn't work, right? You know, so that racism comes in different varieties. There's a kind of racism which consists of active malevolence, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the Ku Klux Klan, you know, it's the segregationists. There's also a kind of racism and anti-Semitism, too, for that matter, or homophobia, that comes from indifference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want you would never drag Jews away, you know, to the concentration camps, but on the other hand, you know, you're not going to intervene to stop it, or you don't really care, or you're weighing the good and the bad. And my own view, and this is just my view as a white Southerner born into what was still a segregated society, this was a dodge used by a lot of people who were moderately racist. I mean, they weren't malevolently racist. But the fact is, if you think there are two sides to the question of whether black people should be arrested, you know, for dining at white-only restaurants, then in my book, you're a racist. I don't care if you have black friends. I don't care if you care about blacks being disproportionately in prison. That's not an issue on which there are two sides.
Sure.
For a civilized person.
No, I certainly wouldn't want to be in a position of having to defend Ron Paul. But it seems that there's still a possibility. It's true that he's running as a Republican. His son was elected as a Republican. But they're constantly being asked, and they were just on Fox News, asked whether or not if he doesn't do well or doesn't win, which is not likely given Romney's surge, that he will run as a libertarian and as a spoiler. Do you think that's a possibility?
It's possible, you know, like Ralph Nader. And I think that the present political environment in all of the democratic countries in Europe as well as here, essentially what we're seeing is not a new political movement, either the right or the left. It's anti-political movements. It's anti-system movements. So, for example, in Germany, which is a very conservative, prudent country, they've elected representatives from the Pirate Party, which is a protest party. And if that sort of thing might happen in, I don't know, the Mediterranean countries, mm-hmm. but if the Germans are so unnerved by this continuing global crisis, then, of course, all kinds of crazy things are going to happen in other countries. So I think we're in a period of turmoil. And also I think that means that no matter who wins this year, everyone will be announcing after November 5th that there's now a new Republican era, there's now a new Democratic era, or something like that. I think we're in a period of flux where people are just angry and will be angry, you know, as long as the mass unemployment and the slow economy persist. And they'll just take out their anger every couple of years the only way they can, which is at the voting booth. But it means that it's going to be very difficult to establish working majorities in Congress, and it's going to be very difficult to carry out any kind of systematic program of reform in this turbulent atmosphere.
But just in closing, Michael Lind, why do you think then in this angry electorate, with this angry electorate, with the shrinking middle class globally because of globalism and a lot of unemployment, a lot of uncertainty, why would the American voters vote for the representative of the 1%, the oligarchical candidate?
Well, the only explanation I can come up with is, as I said, most people, unlike your listeners, derive their information very scantily from TV ads and radio ads and, you know, the occasional Rush Limbaugh show. And the fact is that if they're not paying attention and the only thing they know about Newt Gingrich, say, is that according to the Romney ad, you know, he was on the Fannie Mae payroll, that's all they know about him, then the Romney ad effectively destroyed that rival, right? And then you're blitzed with a lot of pro-Romney ads. Now, in the past, I was always skeptical of people who I thought overstressed the importance of campaign donations and so on. But in this new post-Citizens United environment, I don't know what other explanation there is. And we see this again, it's not unique to the United States. You know, Berlusconi until recently was prime minister of Italy. And he was just a media tycoon, right? I mean, it's as though, of course we have Bloomberg, right, as mayor of New York. Mm-hmm. And there are even noises about Bloomberg running for president. So I think we're in this new world where basically those who control the media and those who can raise money to manipulate it, can become not only kingmakers, but kings themselves.
So it's the democratic game show democracy.
Yeah, I think the parties as organizations are more or less extinct. And this is true even in Congress and in the Senate. The parties are basically dead. You have the candidate, and then you have the candidate's donors, who may be special interest groups, or they may be rich individuals, or in some cases you have self-finance candidates. And then you have the media people who tell you how to target this particular niche audience that you need. And then, you know, you go through the indignity of meeting these people at Howard Johnson's every 2 years if you're a congressman, or every 4 years if you're running for president. But after that, you know, you basically are a free agent. And it means you're free from the structure of an organized political party. And I think you see this happening in Europe as well as America. That is, it's just something about the nature of a suburbanized TV-watching population, that the kinds of political parties like the Democrats and Republicans used to be in the U.S. and Labor and Conservatives used to be in Britain, where you had the local precinct group, and then you had the state, and then you had the national, and it was all this kind of hierarchical club, and ordinary people took part. I think that's collapsed. Instead, you have just free-floating, largely ignorant voters. I mean, they're ignorant of politics. They're not ignorant of other things. And they're being manipulated by targeted, largely TV and radio campaigns,
which are making the media moguls even richer. So I thank
well, that's
you for
right. even if you no matter who wins,
they win.
They win. Yeah.
So, well, I thank you for joining us, Michael Lynn.
Well, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Lynn, the Whitehead Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation, the author of Made in Texas, George W. Bush and the Southern Takeover of American Politics, What Lincoln Believed, and The American Way of Strategy, U.S. Foreign Policy, and the American Way of Life. He's been an editor and a staff writer for The New Yorker, Harper's Magazine, and The New Republic, and has an article at Salon.com, Race, Liberty, and Ron Paul. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the strikes over gas subsidies being removed in Nigeria.
Black and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the streetlight watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. Hey, can you relate? We living in a
no more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space.